Okay, we're back and we're going into Part B, and Part B has one chart. It is a it's one chart, but it's actually two charts put together. And in the top part, we have BUSTX, which is a long-term treasury bond fund. It's been in existence for over 20 years and has very seasoned management. And then at the chart underneath is dollar sign TYX is the interest rates on long-term treasury bonds. I see I misspelled term and long-term deflationary trend for 30-year treasury bond interest rates, which is the red line going down. And that that declining interest rates is analogous to rising bond prices. And so on the upper chart, we have the green rising total returns for long-term treasury bonds. And in the VUSTX, which would be a sort of a classic mainstream type investment, if you were looking for a long-term bond fund, you'll notice that I have a blue moving average, which runs through. And if you were planning to try to optimize your purchase point, you would tend to let the reddish trace pull back to the blue moving average. And then expect it to go higher if the trend can be remains on the upside. I did put the overbought level in, which is the which is parallel to the green line of the bottom's trend line. I have a bottom trend line down there, and then I have a red line which is approximately parallel to that, say called the overbought level. And when you get up high, you're overextended, and you can expect that it might very likely come back to the blue line. And then I have also labeled the scale to the right as capital appreciation. And you see those numbers right next to capital, it says 8.5. And then it goes, and if you go back to the year 2000, you see that number is just under 6.0. It's between 5.5 and 6.0. That is a reference value. It's an arbitrary reference. But from that under 6 to a little over 12, that represents the capital appreciation potential. It's very complicated to add in price changes, and bonds are very complicated, particularly long-term bonds, where you can make your money in capital gains or in the interest, and the everything moves invert. You know, interest rates move versus price, so it gets difficult to compute. However, if you go to Yahoo, they could give you all of this this information, and they use it in the stockcharts.com. So you could have doubled your money from 2000 to the present time period based on that indicator. If you look at the corresponding behavior in the bottom chart, you'll see that during this time period from 2000, you got interest rates peaked at 2000. Everybody was bullish. They thought the economy was going to grow, so they thought the interest rates should be high, reflecting inflationary concerns. And you know, that sort of went down this downtrend line. And it kind of hugged the there's another blue moving average, and then it just exploded downside when they found out that all of a sudden the whole idea that you were inflation was wrong, and you were actually sliding into a depression. Then you had a recovery back up, and at the end of 2000, the current rate was approaching the long-term downtrend. line, which stays down going into the depression, which we expect in the year going into 2020. This scale is basically the interest rates times 10. So as you see, it says right now that the plot is at the at 440. Okay, but the current rate is 4.0. Well, if you take this things and you take the numbers on the scale and move a decimal point, put a decimal point in one digit, you'll get the interest rate that's on the bonds. So you have to remember that that's all going on. Now, it is true, you can see that the interest rates are rising. That's why people like PIMCO are saying, you know, there's a problem with treasury bills or treasury bonds. Okay, now at the same time, starting, you know, Wednesday, Thursday next week, the Federal Reserve has got this quantitative easing program in which they say that they want to reduce the rates on long-term bonds in order, and what they do is they buy the bonds they're existing treasury bonds. They buy them and they put it, and they give the person when they buy it from a check, okay? And this person is supposed to go out and buy risky assets. And what usually happens in this case is when you inject a lot of money in, but you get the high unemployment rate and people suspicious of doing anything, getting them to some kind of a risky growth situation, is it just flows off into an asset bubble. And the asset bubble, of course, is gold. Okay, so the obvious thing you want to do, if you don't like this idea that that your bond prices are going to come down and the rates are going to go up and you're going to lose money, is all you have to do is put some money over into the gold market, and they'll be sort of be counterintuitive. Doesn't always cancel out exactly right, but you can do a lot of things. So let me talk about a strategy where you don't want to do anything complicated. Some people who are, very often they're people in, they have a lot of intellectual tie-up in their profession, just don't want to do anything. They don't want to really do anything that requires them to stop their whatever their professional work is and sit down and go through this stuff. If you just happen to have this plot available, though, you would say there's nothing wrong with owning treasury bonds, assuming that the 80-year cycle is right as you're going into a depression, and therefore the uptrend in the capital returns will exist into 2020, generally into 2020, and the long-term decline in interest rates will continue to go to the bottom line, and eventually people are going to get bankrupt. And what I put in the chart here was to help people that just want to go that route and not get scared by all this other talk that you get, is I've got along the green line in the upper plot, I've got the dot-com bubble listed, 9/11, attack on the Twin Towers. Okay, dot-com bubble you could see coming. Okay, on account of it was so giddy that you could probably miss it. Okay, 9/11 you couldn't see coming because that was out of the blue. And you've got the 87 crash probably would be a surprise. It would be a surprise because if you went back and you asked people before late 2007, what's the chances that the big brokerage houses, Goldman Sachs, all these people, some of them went out of business and the other ones were crippled, okay? And they'd say there's no chance whatsoever, okay, that happening, okay? So maybe you could have done something on that. But a person who owned treasury bonds along that way had to put up with these shenanigans where it bubbled between the overbought level and the green line, but they didn't have to do anything, okay? It is true that when it ran up at the bottom zones, they had to take the decline back, and they sort of had to give up, they lost a year's progress on their building of their portfolio. But they don't have to worry about anything either. All you got to really worry about is whether the chart keeps going onto the upside. The flow of the channel in the upper chart keeps going up to lead you to some confidence that you're going into the depression period, and therefore it's the right strategy. Or you have to go down to the interest rate chart and say that, okay, it's made a double bottom and the interest rates is up to 4. Maybe it's going to go up to 4.5%, 4.4%, or something like that. Okay, so that's part, you want a simple strategy that doesn't change. That's really what you're going to do. However, the interesting thing about it is later this week, coming week, the Federal Reserve is going to say that we want to get the interest rates on the long terms to go down. And the skeptics are going to say, oh, no. You're going to do this. They're going to make, there's going to be this inflationary trend, and these bond prices are going to come way up, and the capital appreciation potential is going to drop below the green line. Okay. So who are you going to bet on? You going to bet on PIMCO? We're the biggest PIMCO bond people. We've been in business 35 years. Or do you want to bet on the Federal Reserve says they want to get the interest rates down on the long-term bonds, which is the opposite story. The answer is the Federal Reserve usually wins because they have the bigger checkbook. And they will figure out, it's up to them to figure out how to get this whole mechanism to go through where you get long-term rates to stay down low, which keeps the bond prices up high, OK? okay, while they don't cause an asset bubble which scares the long-term bondholders, that's a very delicate position that they have to go through, okay? But they generally don't lose the battle because no matter how big an institution is, they're bigger, and it's because they have the capability to write large checks. That's going to be a fascinating example of what's to come in the latter part of next week, because the market's going to have to digest all these, the dichotomy here, and come up with the bottoms up. Well, in T-theory, what we claim is that the long decline in the capital appreciation from the peak at the end of 08 down to the beginning of the latest rally has a T that says that the bond prices will dip now, but then they'll come up to at least the old highs, hopefully come up to the red line again, in the June-July time period of next year, as people find out you're going into a depression. It becomes more obvious. So I think that's... But the other argument that I just gave you is probably the same thing as the T. It's just different. We don't know where this rise in the current rate is going to end. The thing that you'd probably, just as a guesstimate, is you would say that there's the blue moving average in the interest rate area, T by X, okay, is, it's like 4.3 or 4.4%. It's 44, 43, that's 4.4, 40.3%. So you're going to suffer if you come back on the upside. But there's always the possibility, you have to remember, of the 9/11 type of a situation where you have no warning. So if you're taking the long-term view of your interest treasury bonds, the only warning sign that you get that something has gone wrong is these channels don't work out right. But, going down here isn't anything abnormal. So that's one strategy that you can use. The other strategy that you can use is if you look at the 2000 to the present appreciation, you get a double. And the money that you invested in 2000 was normal. If you look at the gold mega T as an example, what you have in the gold mega T is a rise in gold from under $300 to above $1,200, which is a 4-to-1. So you can say in gold, you got a fourfold increase. So why isn't gold better, at least through the mega T, for the gold mega T, which goes up to the year 2020? Why wouldn't gold be better? Well, it turns out that the fact that gold has done twice as well in multiples almost always means, through nature, that it's twice as risky. So you have to factor in the fact that the idea that if you get you probably the best way to factor in a strategy which uses the two is to try to adjust the risks so that they're comparable. In other words, take the risky one down, which is twice as risky, down to half of the riskiness of the treasury bonds, which traditionally would be very low, considered to be very low risk. So if you put $10,000 in treasury bonds, you would put only $5,000 in gold. And if you do that, you get the conversion ratio that's used two-thirds in bonds and one-third in gold. That's how you derive that. You have to look at the other chart where you put the VUSTX over the GLD, which I'll probably do next week, so it's just to carry on the conversation. But you do have a problem here of trying to get on the upside. The way you can reduce that risk is to go over to the high yield bonds. But that you're going to play that game with a danger too, because if people decide that you're going into a depression, low quality bonds are vulnerable. So you're walking a tightrope. The gold versus the long term treasury bonds is probably the easiest one, because you eventually, once you set it up, you have an aggravation with the two trends are both going into fluctuations, but it tends to be they tend to mutually cover up their the usual risk. The risk in treasury bonds is inflation, because inflation will eat away the bond values and the cart will roll over. However, gold is a traditional hedge against inflation. So if you put it down roughly to like twice as many bonds as rubber gold, you tend to cancel out a lot of the problems. And then what you do is you look at the value of the portfolio spread with this ratio, and it tends to smooth out. I don't think that stockmarket.com allows you to take 2/3 of the VUSTX plus 1/3 of the GLD and add them up to a composite chart. But I would be interested in knowing if you can do that, because it's a simple way to find the strategy. What you would do is you would come up with a composite chart, and you would look at the you look at the net channel that you get with the mixture. Okay, I can do that one of the programs that I set up. But if somebody knows how to, you can do that within the confines of stockcharts.com, that would be interesting. Usually they do ratios, but they don't do composite sums on that one. Now, just one other idea, which is of no practical interest, but is of theoretical interest, is that this combination of a treasury bond mixture with a gold bond mixture is an example of a term which, like Wall Street, tries to spring onto people, which is called bifurcated strategies. Okay, it always perks people up because it's not a word you hear very often. But in the traditional economic sense or financial sense, one assumes that a portfolio should be set up with the majority of its money, say, as an example, 70% of the money should be in common stocks, okay? And then that's the heart of it. And then maybe, to make the example illustrative of my discussion, is you put 10% in gold at the extreme to cover up the cases of inflation, runaway inflation. And then on the other side of the extreme, you put 20% in quality bonds, which could be treasury bonds, okay? And when you draw out this on a chart in some fashion, you have a bell-shaped curve where there's a small amount at the left extreme. You get the bell curve rises up, and you get your major portion is the common stocks, and then it tails off, and then in the right-hand extreme for a depression, you have a 20% position in bonds, quality bonds, just call them quality bonds, okay? The term bifurcated refers to a strategy which doesn't have a bell shape, but has a dumbbell shape, which is you only use the end point, the two extremes, and you blow out the middle at the end. So you own no common stocks, okay? And you have 10% in gold, and you have 20% in quality bonds, okay? So what are you going to do with the 70% of the money? You put it in treasury bills? It doesn't yield anything, so you can't do anything. So what you do is you scale everything up by a factor of 3, and you now get to 10%, it's bifurcated, but you go up from 10 to 30% in gold, and you take the 20% and you go up by a factor of 3, and you're at 60% in bonds, and you got 10% in cash to play with, okay, for emergencies and stuff like that, okay? And that's called bifurcated. That's bifurcated, but it doesn't have, as long as you're in the gold going up into the year 2020, that strategy can stay for 10 years. Another example of a bifurcated strategy is the Hussmann funds, which is it takes an army of PhDs to do it, but you lock the money up into bonds, and then what you do is you go and you get the statistics right to capture the gains from common stocks when they occur, but you avoid the losses. Okay, and he's done well for that one. Another way which you bifurcate, but you do it in time with timing, is the best bond strategy, where you flip flop between the low quality high yield bonds. And presently, we're in the high yield bonds. Okay, we're trying to stay away from this because that's what they're buying, the story that's bullish. So you buy in the run bonds, but he says we don't even want to get caught near the where we want to get near the decline that's coming in the bond market, okay? But it's just a cyclical decline, so we're just playing that cyclical. So it's bifurcated, but and you deal with these two extremes in bonds. There's no middle ground for the bonds. We don't know ordinary bonds. You're two extremes, but it's a flip-flop in time. Hussmann is a strategy which takes an army of PhDs to set it up, but it probably modifies itself it's probably adaptive and so forth. But that's complicated. But the one that you just use, the gold deposit, really the simple one that you can use. And if you don't want to deal with that, just go with the treasury bonds. Because in the end, the winner on this game is the one that owns when you get into a global decline, everything goes to pieces. And you want to be with a person that has the Trident submarines and the B-2 bombers, because in the end, it's going to disrupt into a war. That's one of Charles Nenner's when you go into these things, you always end up in a war. Okay, so military might count. So you don't want to be influenced too much about this thing. And remember, this stuff here is just normal volatility. And as long as the trend is going up, it's okay. All right, so that ends part B. And now we're going to go over and I'm going to explain to you a little bit about the gold. Usually another one of Parker's creative ideas, the money flow indicator. He calls them money flow indicator T's, but you can call them different ways. And there's where you help kind of find another way to optimize the bond versus gold type of a strategy. We'll be back in just a while.